When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Whatever's that?
Knowledge. Accumulated wisdom of centuries.
Interesting stuff, isn't it?
If I could understand it.
What?
Well, look, I read about something that's just happened. Well, the next page says it didn't happen at all.
So?
Over the page says it did happen, but many years ago.
Oh, you're on shaky ground.
Am I?
There's a highly dangerous cannon. I need to understand, so you need to let us...
Hall to open.
Hall to open.
Yes, and what do you do?
I challenge you to a mind-bending contest.
Tell us everything.
Oh, come on.
Come on, let's look busy.
Goodbye and get out of Pull to Open, an ongoing quest to check out all of Doctor Who in completely random order, I guess. But today we're doing something really unusual and unexpected. Did I get you off your game with that introduction? That's the whole point, dear listener, because today we are exploring Doctor Who canon and departures from it, and does the canvas of Doctor Who and its consistency even matter?
Yes.
I'm Pete Paschal.
And is your name even Pete Paschal? I Doctor Who canon, it's so loosey-goosey that even Doctor Who podcast canon is uncertain. Doctor Who podcasters lie. That's rule number one. but yes, no, I'm Chris Taylor, and we are on this side quest because quite specifically of the story that we went to last time and the story that took us to next, both had sort of irresistible lures for any Doctor Who fan who loves to talk about this thing called canon. You all know what that is, like an attempt to impose a consistent universe story worldview on top of an entire franchise, often seen in other science fiction franchises, which we'll get to. And it's a little bit different in Doctor Who. And of course, Brain and Morbius, we just talked about this last time. That of course changed Doctor Who canon forever with the existence of what were known as the Morbius Doctors for a while, but
it later became
actual canon, and they were just rewriting canon on the fly because that's what you did in the 70s. It was very loose, and Doctor Who's sort of always been that way, and how could it really be any other way? But what was interesting was when we went to the Keep O'Trakan. You don't normally think of that as a story that deals with Doctor Who canon, but that it does in very, very subtle ways. And there's one that I wanted to quote. So there's a scene in Keeper of Trakan, which, you know, isn't necessarily well known, but it's the Doctor and Adric aboard the TARDIS, and they've just pulled out the Doctor's time logs. Basically, I'm not sure if it's like a continuation of his 500-year diary that he had in like the Trouton era.
To be clear, they're really big books. Like,
really?
That you've seen in university library.
Really big books with terrible handwriting. And the Doctor says, interesting stuff, isn't it? Adric says, if I could understand it. Doctor says, what? Adric says, well, look, I read about something that's just happened. And the next page says it didn't happen at all. So over the page, it says it did happen, but many years ago. Yes, well, I suppose it is a bit above your head. So
he's always insulting Adric in some subtle way. Anyway,
But there's also another point where they talk about Adric notices the Doctor has no logical consistency to what he says. He's like, "Oh, you noticed that, did you? Well, as long as that's understood, we'll get along fine."
Yeah, exactly. And I guess our question is about the Doctor's whole attitude in that scene, which is, does this thing we call canon even matter? And I think we might come up on opposite sides of a fence here, where I tend to favor the idea that the answer yes. And I've got a Doctor Who magazine here that I got years ago. This was actually came out during the Tennant era, and it was like right before, this is actually the one Matt Smith's on the cover. There's a great article in it by a writer named Jonathan Morris, which talks about at the time the issue of like public alien invasions in Doctor Who, and that sort of changed forever in the Christmas invasion. And he brings up the problem, like, well, the more you have these public invasions and the more the world becomes this version of the world that isn't our world, the less you have that, you know, verisimilitude for, you know, the to use the technical term of like, this is, this is our world that we are, that is being threatened by these aliens, not some all parallel universe. And it's a problem. And then since that article came out, they've sort of glossed over the problem with things like the cracks in time. And there's probably a dozen other things they've probably thrown in that could explain why the Earth itself keeps getting reset.
Right. But the toy maker's jigsaw, of course, being the most recent get out clause.
Yeah, exactly. And you kind of have to do these things, but it does kind of bring up the issue again and again that I think the article does a really good job of dissecting, which is, do you want, how much does that internal consistency of the show matter? And I do think it matters a lot. My view, and yeah, honestly, maybe this is becoming a convince me I'm wrong desk that I have in front of me. It's like, yeah, I do want the things that are happening on screen to matter. And I do want to stick with these characters week after week after week and sort of find out what happens. And if they keep glossing over things and just resetting stuff seemingly on the fly without earning it, you know, in some key way, I'm going to start to check out on some level. And, you know, that sort of leads to probably one of our other Doctor Who sort of meta commentaries, which is rage quitting.
Yes, you know? Yes.
Which there are times in New Who in particular where I've felt like rage quitting for this reason under a particular showrunner. Moffat.
Yes. Well, speaking of modern showrunners, I'm going to give you a point counterpoint there. I was not around for SNL era and the whole Jane, you ignorant slut thing, so I don't know if I'd be using it correctly here. But no, I got to say, if you treat canon too seriously, you end up as Chris Chibnall. And you create the timeless child because you're like, oh, right, I had to do it. Yep, exactly. And all right, we'll see you next week, folks. We should, you know, there's a very fine line because, as you point out, Moffat is a bit loosey-goosey and Chibnall is a bit, bit too serious with it, but I'm definitely going to come down on the loosey-goosey side. And here's the reason, because I am also associated with another franchise. I wrote a book on Star Wars, and we also the Keeper of Tarkin making me think of Star Wars because they keep talking about the source in 1979 when it was written. But how could you not think of the Force? Come on. Yes, the source. It's also interesting that Tom Baker to think about it spelled S-A-U-S-C-E. We're on the source, but yes, to discuss the source, it's getting saucy. But you know, Doctor Who does let you get saucy with it, whereas Star Wars, like, there are so many wars over canon in Star Wars, and in fact, there was sort of a famous like wiping over of canon in 2014, where they basically said none of the novels are now canon. Prior to that, they had like four different levels of canon. But in writing that book, I came across a lot of fans who were like very serious about their canon. And I also came across a lot of folks who were like, you guys are just like, you're getting too serious. This is shading into obsession. Yeah. And I just remember one guy who I quoted in the introduction for the book who went to a costume contest for like the opening of Revenge of the Sith and saw all these like old school cans booing the kids on stage. And he's like, okay, you've gone too far. Like just because their costumes aren't canon, like now you're booing kids. What have you become?
Yeah.
You know, so you can kind of not live it up to the lessons of the franchise.
It's so weird that like Star Wars has become that. That I always felt Star Trek was the franchise that was more slave to canon.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly in the Next Generation and Deep Space Nine and Voyager era, it seemed like they were trying to build up a very consistent universe.
Yeah.
And in that universe, they sort of started layering on things that I feel like we're trying to just sort of expand on within these confines. to a point where it just got kind of boring, you know, and they just kind of like there wasn't much more to fill in. And I think it even Enterprise what felt very much the same. And again, this is probably more symptomatic of that it was the production team and the creative people in control of Star Trek at the time were all the same. And they had these sort of Bibles and doctrines. And it took like the later reboots, first with the movie franchise and then with Discovery and all the other TV series now, which do feel a lot different than that era of Star Trek, to sort of find something new to do. So with Star Trek, forget Star Trek for a minute. It was basically like there was more of a slave to canon, which honestly, like I think for certainly someone like me, and I think Doctor Who fans, part of the reason it is so interesting is that it is fresh every week. And yes, you have this the canvas of all of time and space, but because production teams come and go, which much more regularity there, that the feel of the show gets very different every few years as well. So there's sort of naturally sort of leads to these sort of discrepancies, and not just discrepancies like across eras, but even within eras. And so I guess, you know, if I'm sort of trying to zero in on a point here, it is like the Doctor Who, I think to your point, has just inherently a more loosey version of canon on its own. But that said, I think the episodes that sort of resonate the most are the best examples of Doctor Who are when they sort of take what they want from that canvas and have a certain amount of continuity that isn't like a stickler to it, but know where the drama was and the interest was and does say it matters to build something new. And what I'm thinking of very much, probably obviously, is like Day of the Doctor, which has been, you know, it's an amazing show. Some people are starting to say it's overrated. I don't think it is. I think it's just sort of an amazing, extraction from the entire canvas of Doctor Who to put out something that is many things, but also fairly consistent with
it is
for the universe the Doctor Who had painted up till that point. So
and also why I think Moffat doesn't get a fair break, because he was the one who constructed that and arranged it right throughout his time, and he's saying yes and to all of RTD's things about the Time War. Like, yeah, that a wonderful, marvelous fooling of strands. That's what you can do when you're tight enough with canon. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that I have no issues with Doctor Who canon being completely loosey-goosey. I mean, obviously I do. We had that rage quit episode about, Mel, the appearance of Mel from the Doctor's future that's never quite resolved. Like, you could say that that's a canon issue within the same story, right? That they're just not really paying attention to Mel's origins when the Doctor goes off with her at the end. You know, that was really a big problem for me. Still is. Remains my biggest continuity problem in the entire history of Doctor Who. But also, like, yeah, if you don't, you can't be too serious about it. And also, I would say, hazard a guess, if I can just break the fourth wall here, as it were, dear listener, or dear viewer, and just say that Pull to Open would not really be possible in a different franchise, because we have so much headcanon on the show. Right. We use the Clara splinter every time to kind of fill in those gaps. And that is something that the mild inconsistency of Doctor Who, I'll just call it, allows us to do. It allows us to participate in the creation of the franchise and, everything that happens. And we do it all the time. We love it on the show. I would say if you're at the point where you're sort of doing the equivalent of, like, I don't know, shouting at your friends might be the equivalent of, booing kids on stage at a costume contest, then you've gone too far. And I can certainly think of a few YouTube videos where, like, people have just gone too far in trying to, reconcile the continuity of Doctor Who and complain that it isn't, reconcilable enough. Like, at that point, like, you've lost touch with joy. So I think, canon only so far as it brings you joy.
Yeah, I agree. And that's kind of like a good segue to my biggest continuity problem in Doctor Who, which we've already said it, which is the timeless child stuff, because I don't think it brought joy. And that's kind of what I would accuse it of, which is to say, like, you know, I've been slowly making my peace with it in the way that they're treating it with the specials. Certainly since we did our Brain of Morbius podcast, which was just last week, it's sort of brought a truth to it again of like, oh yeah, of course these were previous incarnations of the Doctor. What else could they be? They're not previous Morbiuses. So it is, that is sort of like a consistency with, in keeping with that. But the way Chibnall, I think, ended up treating it, again, is like, here's this thing, it's out there, and I don't really have much more to do with it other than this. And they sort of ended up doing a little bit in Flux. But it just felt a bit like it's not, I don't know, it's hard to explain. Like, it didn't feel the same as when RTD destroyed Gallifrey in the time.
Yeah.
Right. It, you know, that felt consistent and adding to canon. And this felt a little bit like a rug pull.
And again,
I think if he had been more of meticulous about it and figured out where to go with it, that would balance both that idea of earlier Doctors and the show as we know it. I think it could have been accepted, but I don't think he really succeeded there.
Here's the thing about Timeless Child that that I have the biggest problem with, and I think it's sort of an indication of like how you got to choose kind of how loose you are with canon, right? So my biggest problem with Timeless Child is actually not in Timeless Children. It's in Fugitive of the Dajun. The fact that the Fugitive Doctor has a police box TARDIS was sort of, I don't know if that was intended as a misdirect or what he was thinking there. But if you then say that Fugitive Doctor is, you know, one of these previous, you know, pre-Morbius Doctor incarnations, then is it like, does every version of the Doctor have to pass through Totter's Lane or something? Like, is that?
Yeah, or just end up falling back on the police box for some reason. Yeah. Which is, again, it's like, then why do it? You know what I mean? Then it's just the same thing over and over again. Like, and we have seen subsequently, particularly in Flux, that the Fugitive Doctor was doing stuff for the Division. And so there were not entirely the same kinds of things, but it is this, I don't know, there's just not enough there, right? Like, I mean, if it's a completely different character, what's the point? And if he's the same character, it's kind of like, what's the point? I never got the point, you know? That was, I guess, it felt very empty to me.
Now
I've kind of more at peace with it having been now part of Doctor Who canon. Mm-hmm. It's a little like, it doesn't really add a lot, in my view.
I'm totally at peace with it myself, except for this bit. And I think it's because it's a headcanon step too far. Like, if you're like, okay, maybe there's some connection with the police station scenes in the Timeless Children, right? Maybe that's why the Doctor always has to have a police box. And actually, because of Keeper Truck, and I went on and watched a few episodes of Legopolis, in which it's strongly hinted that the chameleon circuit wasn't even supposed to work in the Type 40 that the Doctor stole. Mm-hmm. Like, he says something like he should have stuck around for the chameleon upgrade. It was bound to be a police box. Like, you could have predicted that if Totter's Lane is his first port of call. Right. But then,
one time, that sounds silly.
Yeah. So, you know, you've got to then sort of headcanon this thing of like, well, is Division sending the Doctor to Totter's Lane as like a reset button every time to start out? In which case, are they spacing them apart? Like, how does that work exactly? And you have more questions than answers, right? So maybe that's the definition of when it's not easily headcanonable, to coin a word.
Yeah. I think there's a lesson I'm extracting from this discussion so far, particularly for future showrunners and writers. It's that a retcon, even a major one, is okay, because you know it's kind of what we're talking about here, like changing canon, right? Mm. And it can be okay. It's just that you kind of need to earn it, and it doesn't mean you have to go over every single detail. But there should be more of a plan to it than just getting excited about doing an interesting thing that contradicts something that came before, which I get. But this happened like almost every week with Stephen Moffat, right? He'd get excited about it. And again, I give him a lot of credit. I've sort of made my peace with Moffat too. He's a great writer. And I think he's crafted some of the absolute best ever stories in Doctor Who. But he gets so into his emotional beats and the places he wants to go that sometimes he takes a shortcut and you have to do the work. So to your point on the Fugitive of the Dajun, do the work of not just showing the TARDIS to get us go, do the work of like, how did that happen? How did that get there? And have that either slowly revealed or at least implied at some point along the way, rather than just shrug. You know, it's too many of these shrugs, particularly in a concentrated period of time, that I think you get to the rage quitting problem.
Yeah, it feels like an insult to the fans who've been paying attention. So I do get that. And actually, to that point, I wanted to ask you because Moffat, to my mind, is actually pretty good about stitching to get, like, he's the best at season arcs, I think, you know, the Crack in Time, you know, the river season arc. It's pretty good at that. But so what sticks in your head as a canon, Moffat's biggest canon problem?
His canon problem, honestly, it's how he ended up treating some of the bigger monsters in the franchise, both the Daleks and the Daleks. Cybermen.
Yeah.
And not really explaining, like, I was actually saving this commentary for when we did Victory of the Daleks. We haven't done that many Dalek episodes in the Moffat era, honestly. Yeah. There weren't that many, but I don't think we've done any of them for the podcast.
Well, just Magician's Apprentice.
Sorry, the later ones. I'm thinking specifically of Smith, I guess. But in Victory of the Daleks, he explicitly reboots the Daleks with this Power Rangers
new paradigm.
You put aside the design, which I think was ridiculed rightly. Mm-hmm. It's an idea, you know, you're going to do this new paradigm and you're going to do something. And yeah, you can always change the design. But like, if you're going to reboot the Daleks in this new thing where there were five different, I forget what they are, like scientists and they're Supreme and, you know, they're all band names, I guess. But it's go with it. And then he just completely forgets about it, doesn't do it. Then he introduces a Dalek Parliament. Forgets about that. And let's like every time. And then there was I remember the Smith finale, he wipes. In the Asylum, he wipes the memory. And then in the finale, they say, oh yeah, we didn't do that. We actually just restored all the memories of the Doctor or whatever. And it's like, pick something, you know, like what are you doing? Like, and this is, you're just making these number one monsters and Doctor Who just look like idiots by completely revamping them. And there's no consistency to their story. Just don't use them if you hate them that much.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, it's always good to know how other fans are affected. For to my mind, like, the only problem I had with the Moffat era in terms of continuity and canon is something that we kind of are dealing with each week to correct. It's the Impossible Girl. It's the fact that, you know, the Clara era can be split into two halves, one where she's quite clearly the Impossible Girl and is splinters of herself, and then the Capaldi era where we've just sort of forgotten about all that. Like, you know, after Name of the Doctor, it never really gets mentioned again.
Yeah. And she's just this mortal, and even though she's splintered in time and over the place,
we know, you'd think she'd be looking around for future splinter versions of herself. If she goes through the Doctor's entire timeline, I don't know, but that's the one that seems to throw up more questions than answers for me, which is, I guess, how I would define a canon problem that you can't headcanon your way out of, because you just keep ending up with more questions.
So I will say, though, like, there's clearly like a lot of examples of good retconning in Doctor Who. And I think a lot of them are actually in the classic series. You know, well, the Daleks, number one, I mentioned this before, but the Daleks, they've kind of rebooted a number of times. Well, a few times, but it's even in the classic series, the first reboot was literally the second story with the Daleks. So that was, you know, okay, they were this race on Skaro, and now they're conquering the galaxy. But the other one is Genesis of the Daleks. That was a huge reboot, because not only did it reboot the show for how the show presented the Daleks, they never really went deep into their creation, but there was a little bit said about the Dolls and the Thals and whatever else, and the very first Dalek episode. And then they just said, no, we're just, this is, we want to introduce this Davros guy. We want to have this war, which we said was a nuclear war. Now it's a 1,000-year war. And they just do all this stuff. And then it also contradicted the comics, right? All the tie-in media, which had done a lot about Daleks. So they were just like, screw all that. We're doing this thing. And they ended up doing one of the absolute best stories in Doctor Who. And a lot of fans have sort of tried to sort of, even the A-History books that we've talked about before have tried to reconcile this and have come up with creative ways to have both.
Yes.
Actually, it's more than what two. It's like the original history, Genesis, and then even the comics with Yarvalin or whoever else contributed to it. So that can be fun. Mm-hmm. But I also just like, I think the point is, it's not a rule that like, oh, let fans fill in headcanon. I don't think that's the rule. I think the rule is, if you have something that feels right, and I know that's not a great rule, because I'm sure everything felt right to Moffat at the same time, but the Daleks being created in a fascist sort of Hitlerian by Hitlerian figure in a fascist society, that makes a ton of sense. And there's a lot of good material you can create with that. And they did. So it's like, we're going to go with it. So, you know, is the rule just go with your gut? I don't know, but it's got to work. Right. And again, this might be also a problem that I have with The Timeless Child, and this is for a different reason than the continuity reasons, where it doesn't feel right to me. It makes the Doctor too special. And I've talked about this with respect to The Deadly Assassin and other Gallifrey stories, where I like that when the Doctor comes back to Gallifrey, all of his superpowers are meaningless. And the fact that he has to get by on his wits, and he still wins because that's what's special about him. He's just a really clever dude.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing that's got to be consistent, right, is the Doctor's character and the style and the never cruel or cowardly, although we've dealt with the times that the Doctor actually was, but that's, you know, the aspirational Doctor. Mm. But I'm glad you mentioned A-History, because I do want to bring that up. It is probably the nerdiest attempt ever to stitch all of Doctor Who together in canon, but I want to really draw attention to the introduction, which is where they say, the authors of A-History, that this is just a game. This is not, they're not trying to be definitive, and that they have, and let's just quote here, Doctor Who has always been created using a method known as, quote, making it up as they went along. The series glories in its inventions and throwaway lines. They make the point that it's doubtful the writer of The Mysterious Planet has a single passing thought about how the story fit in with Sun Makers, even though both of those authors were Bob Holmes. I love that. But also they're like, you know, yeah, look, continuity doesn't work. It's unfortunate. It's this is one attempt. It's not the right answer. It's a game. And they also quote the discontinuity guide, which is another thing that sort of has
built here too.
Yes, has it built right into its name that like you ultimately can't, like, you know, looking for a grand unified theory of Doctor Who is never going to work. It's just impossible. It had some very healthy advice regarding continuity in the discontinuity guide. Quote, take what you want and ignore what you don't. Future continuity comps will just have to adapt to your version. Which I love. Right. So, you know, guide for showrunners.
Well, and it's interesting, again, as they talk about, like, what sort of takes over as the truth. Mm. So, like, again, the Daleks are the clearest example of this. Like, the Daleks as galactic conquerors is so now embedded throughout the entire canon that their depiction in the very first appearance, ironically, is now the sore thumb that's sticking out.
It's
an interesting thing to sort of think about, like, what's the truth. And again, I think what I was sort of saying earlier sort of provides a guide. It's like, oh, if you make it good enough, we'll go with it. And then, you know, it'll get embedded inevitably.
Maybe what we're getting towards here is a notion of, like, it matters more, like, the closer together the contradiction is. Right? So it mattered that Timeless Children didn't deal with the police box thing in Fugitive to Judoon because it was the same season. You could sort of reasonably expect that we're going to have that question in our heads. Mm-hmm. So, you know, please deal with it. Now, if you're talking about stuff that's, you know, discontinuity between entirely different seasons, I don't think that that's
right.
necessarily a reasonable expectation. Unless it was like the previous season. You know, then you can sort of expect, but like, you know, then it doesn't, then you can actually feel clever for pointing out the discontinuity rather than feeling like you're just being treated as dumb by showrunners who just don't care about,
yeah.
you know, about their product.
And as much as we like applying headcanon and, you know, you don't leave it up to fans for important things like that. I think, you know what I mean? And even if you do, take a while to figure it out. So yeah, I mean, again, it's like you kind of need to come halfway on some things, but sort of the showrunner. A good example of another franchise which we haven't talked about, Battlestar Galactica,
yeah,
where there was a healthy amount of making it up as they went along, which
Starbuck. Maybe
a little too bad. You knew exactly where I was going. Wow, probably a little too much. I basically want to cut right to the Starbuck thing where, yep. you know, she dies, she comes back, and they never, ever answer what she is. And it's kind of like, what are you talking? Like, what? Pick something. You can't expect me to make up everything, you know, yep. or it's not necessarily everything, but it's like if the lesson is come halfway at least, they came like 20% of the way, and then the viewer had to fill in 80%. And if I'm filling in 80% or even 60%, you're not giving me enough. So,
you know, I can highly recommend running into the Battlestar Galactica showrunners at Comic-Con, as I did one year. I happened to be a friend of a friend, and we were in this private booth, this party. I got to tell them my feelings about the Starbuck thing. I can recommend that for just good catharsis.
Recommend running into the showrunner?
Yes.
What you think about their worst retcon or worst
yes.
Continuity decision?
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. You know, I was polite about it. I was like, you know, I know you're sort of making this up, and they're kind of sheepish about it. You know, they've had to get this from all sides. I mean, you know what? I think, you know how you go to conventions and you pay $100 to have your photograph with Mark Hamill or whatever. I think if you paid like $200, you could walk up to, say, Chris Chibnall and tell him exactly what you think about the Timeless Child. And then just unload, and you feel so much better. That could be worth several therapy sessions. And Chibnall would just rake it in. Like, he'd be making bank with this. He's just sit there going, oh, I see. Well, thank you for your comments.
That's awesome. That's a good Chibnall impression. before we go, I wanted to just touch on one sort of final bit of continuity paving over that the show does consistently, and it's the line that we use and make fun of here all the time, which is the Doctor lies.
Yes.
Is this a useful thing? Obviously it's a useful thing, but it's also, I feel it's, they say it so often, and maybe it's because we say it so often that I feel like maybe they say it more often than they do, but I do feel like it's kind of gotten to the point where it's a bit of a cop out, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I'd be tough to sort of get into a single instance that really pissed me off, but you know, he's a name dropper of historical figures, certainly.
Oh yes.
But if you're using it to pave over like mistakes that were relatively large in terms of like what he did or what continuity choices you made, again, I think you're getting into a blunder here. And also, like, if you're relying on something that calls into question the trustworthiness of your main character on a consistent basis, again, you kind of start to shrug, like, does anything mean anything? And should I just start rage quitting? Or at least not for that specifically, but it adds to the whole rage quitting sense.
I kind of like that one of the most inconsistent things in Doctor Who history begins right there in the very first episode in An Unearthly Child, where we learn that Susan supposedly named the TARDIS. Now, there have been several attempts to explain this, but I think the easiest answer is just that the Doctor's whole family lies. And that, in fact, Doctor Who as a whole may be kind of a You know, it is kind of a sciencey show that does explain stuff. And in our current sort of Einstein-based view of the universe, like, there is no objective truth anywhere. It's all about where you're standing and what you observe, right? There's no objective universe out there. It's all what we perceive, so far as we know. So Doctor Who is just telling you that, you know, like, it's one long Rashomon. It's one, yeah. You know, 60-70 year Rashomon is what's unfolding here. Everyone's perspective is different, and the Doctor's perspective is different from, you know, one page in his time log to the next.
Well, I feel like the better Occam's razor line that you're alluding to, because it's kind of like an Occam's razor line to just whatever, shrug, the Doctor lies.
Yes.
And he does. But it's also, I prefer time can be rewritten.
Yes.
That is, in my view, the perfect retcon line for Doctor Who. So in other words, there's alternate histories of every planet, the entire universe, every character. And there's sort of a meta level that sort of has it all, and I think they could do a little more with that idea. You know, they did a little bit, I guess, in Flux, and you know, even Day of the Doctor and stuff like that. But I'm not encouraging that, but I do think maintaining that view that you know, there may be some future thing that explains some time altering thing that introduces it, that it explains some inconsistency in setting. I like that, as long as it's not overused.
Yes.
And as long as they don't, because when you overuse something like that, you get the Marvel Universe, right? You'll get what has been very disappointing Phase 4. I don't even know if we're in Phase 5 yet or whatever. So we'd all stop keeping track of phases because who cares anymore, right? Because they keep pushing this multiverse button again and again and again. And
too much continuity, too much respect for continuity. It can be a problem.
Yeah. And it's like, it's sort of assuming everyone is a super fan always. And I think this is, if we're ending this on anything, I think it is a forward-looking thing into shooty season. The idea of, like, let's just do Year 1 and let's just have some fun stories again is very, very appealing in an environment like this. So I hope they just start doing that and start fresh with a lot of what Doctor Who has treated as sort of sacred canon.
Yes, from your lips to RTD's ears, and I'll add one thing, which we always have the Clara Splinter to come in and clear stuff up, so I'm calling it now. The Clara Splinter went back and asked Susan, perhaps she went forward in time to ask the Doctor's granddaughter what she should name this time travel machine that the Time Lords have just perfected.
Thereby
Susan wasn't lying after all. So there we go. That was an easy headcanon fix, and we will continue to do easy headcanon fixes week after week on Pull to Open. Keep it right here. It is your source for headcanon. Write in with your own. Write in, leave a comment on YouTube. Tell us why we're wrong. You know, we've got to be wrong at least a dozen ways in this special short trip alone. Come on in and contribute to Pull to Open, contribute as a Viscount, and you can come on the show and tell us how we're wrong, or just be a true companion in the podcast. $7.99, and you can get the podcast a day early, so you can be confident in your headcanon before anyone else is, while they're still waiting for their Keeper of Trakan headcanon to upload. You can have it.
And don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter. We get full notes on every episode we talk about at pulltoopen.net. You can also support the show on Patreon, patreon.com/pulltoopen. We're on all the socials. Pull to Open on TikTok and Blue Sky. Pull to Open 63 on all the rest, including X, Instagram, Facebook, and Threads. And keep on coming back every week here. Well, we will do the work of headcanon and continuity that certain show creators did not do. We're here every week doing it for you guys. So please come on back.
All right. Our headcanon is that you will join us next week for the Keeper of Trakan.
Stay loose, folks.